Hello and welcome to Things Musicians Don't Talk About with your hosts Hattie Butterworth
and me, Rebecca Toll.
Within our vibrant musical world, it can often feel that the struggles and humanity of musicians is lost and restricted.
Having both suffered in silence with mental, physical and emotional issues, we are now looking for a way to voice musicians' stories, discuss them further and to connect with the many others who suffer like we have.
No topic will be out of bounds as we are committed to raising awareness for all varieties of struggle.
So join me, Hattie and guests as we attempt to bring an end to stigma by uncovering the things musicians don't talk about.
Things Musicians Don't Talk About is supported by the Royal Society of Musicians. Since 1738, they have been providing vital financial assistance, advice, and guidance to music professionals unable to work due to accident, illness, stress, or anxiety. Whether you're working as a performer, administrator, technician, or teacher, and everything in between, they're there to help. If you know of someone in need, you can contact them in confidence by visiting their website, which is www.rsmgb.org, or you can contact them by ringing 020 7629 6137. Support their work by becoming a member or donating today.
Ooh, and one last thing before we start the episode. Just want to congratulate Chloe on her very recent appointment to principal guest conductor of the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra. She said when we were recording the episode that she had some exciting news that she couldn't quite share with me yet. And it was this. So congrats, Chloe.
So hi, Chloe. It's nice to see you here in the Royal College of Music. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. Really nice to see you.
Yeah, you too. So for listeners, this is Chloe van Sertestead. And Hattie is not here to join us because she had a health emergency, but she's okay. She just needs to go find some more insulin that works. I've known you for a couple of years, Chloe. I've played in Arch Symphonia with you, which has been a joy to get to know you because I think I always heard about you at Academy, people being like, oh, have you heard of Chloe? Like, she's amazing. But tell me what you're doing at the college at the moment. Why are we in this room right here today?
So first, it's very, very nice to talk to you, to see you. I think it's more than 2 years, actually, for Arch Symphonia, maybe a bit more. But
yeah,
anyway,
probably.
It's quite recent. Well, yeah, more than 2 years because COVID,
oh my gosh,
et cetera.
Yeah.
Anyway, so here I'm conducting the Royal College of Music Symphony Orchestra, mm-hmm. Saint-Saëns Symphony No. 3, the Organ Symphony, and also a contemporary piece by one of their students here.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, it's great fun, very good to work with the students on different thing, rhythm, texture, colors, and and to actually make sure that their personality is really going inside the instruments. That's the most important thing, I think, about music. It's not, I told them, like, think beyond the notes. The notes is only a support of the emotion. Mm-hmm. And then if you actually find the meaning beyond the note, you will find the color, etc. And then it's an endless possibility of emotions.
Wow. I wish I'd heard, like, conductors when I was doing stuff at music college talk about it like that. But yeah, so we wanted to talk to you because we kept seeing stuff on Instagram like slowly popping up about you just being really honest about life pre and post having a baby and being a conductor and traveling and everything. And we just thought that your honesty and kind of candidness about the whole thing was really inspiring. But I wanted to go back a little bit. So tell us about your career in conducting and where it stemmed from. How have you landed up here today in a brief, you know,
in
just
a brief
summary.
Cheeky.
Yeah.
I started my master's in 2015. Uh-huh. So after spending 8 years on the violin and also 4 or 5 years on the viola. So mm-hmm. I have quite a big experience of playing my instruments. Mm-hmm. And then because for me, it was important to step on the podium with an understanding of my instrument. Mm-hmm. After my master's, I spent 2 years my master's in Manchester. Of course, I formed my orchestra, Arch Symphonia, you mentioned, in 2012. And then I signed with Intermusica.
Yes.
So it really enabled me to conduct some amazing professional orchestras. Mm-hmm. I think my debut as a conductor was with the Royal Philharmonic. So it was like, wow, this is just
pretty
really
cool.
Pretty cool. And I learned, a lot. I just feel I'm learning all the time. Mm-hmm. And I know I will be learning when I will be 80 years old. In mm-hmm. any case, it's different way. Of course, of learning. And since 3 years, I think, I'm here at the college once a year. So, mm-hmm. and I'm taking this opportunity to work with the students and to learn repertoire.
Wow.
So I never arrive with a piece I know very well because mm-hmm. because I think it's important to use these opportunities to either youth orchestras or college orchestras, because then I bring the Saint-Saëns symphony to the US next month.
Oh, wow.
And then when I'm coming back in autumn here, I do Sibelius 5 and I've got my debut with Elster. Yeah. So I always take this little opportunities for learning big pieces.
Yeah.
And I always think a conductor should arrive 120% ready.
Yeah.
And it was, and we can talk about it, a mm-hmm. bit of a challenge at the very start of when my daughter arrives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's talk about that. Like, I think, first of all, I'd like to talk about why you feel it's important to talk about the realities of this. And then we can go into what the realities are.
I just feel like social media, very often I'm thinking, oh, should I stay on Facebook or should I stay on Instagram? Very often I'm thinking, oh, it's so superficial. And mm-hmm. because you see some artists that are actually putting, my life is pink and I'm all happy and my makeup is always nice and my cheeks are great. I'm like, I mean, this is not reality. And sometimes... And even sometimes when I was posting some photos with me and my daughter, I was like, this moment I'm really happy. But actually, if I was thinking maybe an hour ago, mm-hmm. she was maybe just not wanting to nap. And mm-hmm. I could have actually do a video of me like, oh my God, I'm like at the bottom of my life. And she doesn't want to nap. And so... Yeah, it's sometimes I have some posts that I'm happy with and I want to share, mm-hmm. but some other times, like I think I did a post recently about pollution and my daughter's breathing this bad air and stuff. I mean, it's nothing to do with pregnancy, but actually think that, okay, now I've got a kid and it makes me think of maybe the more globally about the planet and without... I think as soon as you have a kid, you think more on an omniscient, on a global
level,
level. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so true that like social media is just such a mixed bag, whether it's all these people, as you say, you know, makeup is perfect. And they just, especially in like music and classical music, they just go on stage, they do their thing. It's like, oh, I thought you were just had like a child or like you had a big thing in your life recently. Like, are you okay? Like what? Your life is still perfect. What's going on?
Exactly. I think it can be so draining. Yesterday I had a bad kind of moment looking at, and my partner was like, but why are you looking at this? Just if you want to post something, just post it and don't scroll on, because... So it's tricky to find the right balance.
Definitely, because you need to scroll to find the stuff that's inspiring and honest. But at the same time, if you do scroll, you're going to find stuff that makes you feel bad as well.
Yeah. You know, often I'm thinking, oh, I should just recreate an Instagram with only, you know, maybe one Instagram for all the yoga and the fitness. One Instagram for, you know, mm-hmm. all the things like this. You want to follow maybe this person because you're inspired or, you know, or this mm-hmm. orchestra. But that's it, you know. Mm-hmm. Not all the shit around.
Yes, Chloe. So tell me about, because I think about this a lot. Was there a point, if this is not too personal, like when you were thinking about starting a family, was there a worry that it wouldn't be the right time, or you were waiting for a specific point in your career to do that?
I think not about a specific time in my career, because mm-hmm. now I conduct orchestras that I'm very happy to conduct. And, mm-hmm. you know, I just had my debut with the Philharmonia. And, you know, it's this kind of like orchestras mm-hmm. that I'm working with, and I'm super, super grateful and happy. I think if I was less experienced, I would wait a bit. So this was a good time because of my age, because of the relationship I have with my husband to be, because we're engaged but not yet married. We don't have time yet for
Oh my gosh.
We need to think about that. So the timing in terms of ready or not, we knew we want it. But the timing in terms of season, yes, because I emailed my manager saying, look, we want the kids, but I want to do this gig. I want to do this gig. Wow. So how do I, you know, and she was amazing. Mm-hmm. She has two kids herself and who are in at uni. So really, but I knew I had her support and we talked super openly together. And she said, look, there is no good timing. That's it. I cannot. So just do it and we'll see. So we I think we kind of timed it a little bit. I mean, thinking, okay, let's see if it happens straight away or not. Mm-hmm. And luckily, I was very lucky that it happened very quickly. Mm-hmm. And as Tris, my partner, was saying, maybe too quickly because he wanted to maybe take care of himself before as well, like maybe do some travels and, you know. But of course, we were super happy. Yeah. So this was my worry about, okay, if I'm pregnant and I want to, and I had to cancel Montreal with Nézé Séguin's orchestra, I had to cancel some beautiful Canada and US tour. Mm-hmm. And this really crunched my heart. Yeah. But in a way, you're pregnant and you're super happy. Yeah.
It's a win-win, but still painful nonetheless.
Still painful because it was post-COVID. And I think this was during COVID. I had to already reschedule and then, she's pregnant. More. So I'm still waiting for the invitation.
Yeah.
But you're just so happy. So you kind of forget. Mm-hmm. So my, and I've got some friends, conductor, who's saying like, hey, we want to get pregnant. I mean, I want to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. How did you plan? I was like, well, actually, just the bottom line is like, just do it.
There's no good time.
There is no good time.
Yeah.
Because you can also have some miscarriage. We never know. So just do it and your life will organize itself.
Yeah. That's such a good way of looking at it. And I really appreciate what you said about your manager. I mean, when you first started saying that you emailed your manager, I was like, that's crazy that you kind of have to get your manager involved in the planning of your life. But the fact that she was so supportive and also, I imagine, a comforting voice being like, just do it. Like, you just never know.
Yeah, exactly. And when the funny thing is, my parents don't know this. So, I mean, this is going out publicly.
Hello, Chloe's parents.
When we did the pregnancy test and it was positive, I just called my manager straight away saying, hey, I'm pregnant. So, and of course, she was like, wonderful, that's great. Yep. Okay, if anything happens during the pregnancy and, there is a miscarriage or something, I'll be here to support. You know, she was really great for this. Mm. I think we waited, though, to do a first little test. Mm-hmm. But we didn't wait the 3 months because I needed to be reassured.
Yeah.
So we did that 2 months, 8 weeks or something. And the baby was there. And I think then I said to my parents, I called them and I was like, look, this is, but at 2 months, you don't see much.
Yeah. You could have waited a bit longer have to tell people.
But I was so excited.
Do you think that, when you started planning your work and cancelling work, was there a point at which you thought, okay, well, I'll just wait a little bit longer to see? Or was there like a hesitancy in that?
Yeah. So my strategy that was reinforced by my manager. I said to her, okay, so I got pregnant in May 2022, I guess. And the summer was arriving. So then the new season was going to get announced.
Yeah.
So I said to her, can we contact the orchestras around February when she will be born? To say, okay, Chloe's pregnant, she will, but until I had the first scan that was 100% positive, so the baby was viable and she was growing, etc. So I think what they did is before the orchestras announced their season, they didn't include me in their season.
Sure.
So this was important for me to think like this. Because then it's like cancellation, she's pregnant. And then it's true that, and that's my manager saying that when an orchestra knows that an artist is pregnant and they invited her, people are gossiping a bit, you know? Let's say Canada is a, I mean, it's a big country, but it's a small musical scene. It's not like in France or in the UK. I mean, so let's say that in Canada, Montreal knows that I'm pregnant, and Toronto or Ottawa, I mean, they want to, or Vancouver, they want to invite me. Mm-hmm. Say, oh, she's pregnant, so we should wait for another season. Mm-hmm. So people talk. Mm-hmm. So that's basically why I thought, okay, let's just be as discreet. We'll just take everything out of my diary and everything goes.
It was more of like a, you didn't want things to be out of your control as much as you could.
Yeah.
The gossip would kind of spiral and make it unfair on you. Something like that. And then do you find, or did you find that when people did know that you were treated differently at work? Obviously,
you mean me on the podium?
Yeah.
No, I got a lot of congratulations. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful to see you on the podium. Like, I was at the Finnish radio. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I was, what, 4 months? 4 months? Showing a little bit, but, or maybe 5 months, 4 months and a half. A little bit, but not too much. Mm-hmm. And I put a shirt that was not a bit loose, flowy, you know. And a female trombone player came to see me and she said, yeah, congratulations, it's so good to see a pregnant woman on the pole. I was like, oh, did you notice? Yes, I noticed. But no men told me this. And I'm wondering if there is, just now I'm thinking out loud, if there is something that we notice more than the men. I have no idea, but I did it on, I mean, I didn't want it to be like, I'm pregnant, like a statement.
Yes.
But later, it's funny because at the start I was thinking, okay, I'm a bit loose in my clothes, it's fine.
Sure.
But later when I conducted RPO in when I was 7 months, there are some shirts that are still, but I mean, I'm very thin. And I thought, it's so beautiful. The body of a pregnant woman is so beautiful. And I loved my body. And so I was like, I'm putting a very tight shirt. And I loved it.
What was it about? You said it was kind of a statement, like having that.
It's like,
what is
I can do it. It's like, it's not because I'm pregnant that I think at the start when you have a first kid, you're a bit like, okay, I don't want it to be too a big deal. Mm-hmm. Like, music is first. I'm on the podium. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, fuck it. I like my body. Yeah. I'm still the same conductor. I'm not less good. I'm as much prepared. You sleep a bit less. It's more uncomfortable. It's heavy and stuff. But I was just ready. Mm-hmm. And I think on the moment where you step on a podium, you just have to be ready in any circumstances. If you have a death in your family. Mm. And then if you're not ready, and I said to my manager, if I'm not ready, I'm not going on the podium. And I'll tell you, but I'm someone who wants to honor their invitation.
It's quite a strong move
to
be like, no, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna show that a pregnant woman can do it, that I'm as prepared.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, when I see some of my colleagues who, well, I don't really see a lot of female conductors who are pregnant, but a lot of them, or even a lot of conductors in general, put loose t-shirts. So that's their style, maybe, I don't know. But I mean, today I've got a t-shirt that is, I mean, I've always have a t-shirt that, I think it's just a question of style or something, but I like not hiding anything that you, if you want to show something, you show something. I mean, it's part of my personality, maybe, I don't know.
I guess also showing something as a conductor, right? Like it's your whole body.
Yeah, exactly. Then there is also showing something, for instance, I like being feminine, etc., but I would never wear some really big earrings or big
rings.
You know, I think, as I said, music is music, but this you can't hide the baby inside. You can't hide. At some point it will have to pop. And I liked my body like this, so why not? So I totally take, I was happy. And people were really supportive.
Yeah. And then tell me about this moment where it did pop and like you went off on, you know, maternity leave, and what were the feelings around, you know, stopping working, and how long did you work up until?
Yeah, so I worked until this was also quite a well-timed break. So basically in my life, I need usually two periods during the year where I need a big break to prepare my scores. And so it's usually in December, because December is lots of brass, Christmas, you know, and Handel, Monteverdi, etc. Yeah. I mean, it's music that I will conduct one day probably, but at the moment I don't feel like I'm... my heart is in there.
Yeah.
So usually December is off, so the whole month, usually, or mid-December to mid-January, you know, a month. And the summer is usually festivals, and I'm not yet music director in any orchestras. So I've got usually the whole summer free, with a few gigs here and there, but not like big weeks, you know. So December was the month before... well, 2 months before she arrives. But therefore, with my manager, we said, okay, December is off, and we'll put maternity leave on January, because she was due on the 9th of February, very early. This was it. So 2 months before. So I stopped at month 7.5 or something like this. It was heavy by then.
Yeah.
And yeah, sometimes it was a bit uncomfortable. I conducted without any stools or chair. So sometimes in rehearsals, yes, but during the concert, obviously not. Although I know that some of my colleagues had, it depends until how far you go in the pregnancy.
Of course.
But I think this question is like everyone will know. Everyone will know.
Yeah.
But anyway, in terms of cancellation, it was great to only having to cancel January. Mm-hmm. So she arrived a little early, 3 weeks early.
3 weeks.
3 weeks early,
Elsa.
Yeah.
Cheeky.
So I was talking the whole pregnancy. I was talking to her, and I didn't want her to arrive before week 37. I think it's week 37, because until then there is a risk of premature, etc., and it might be a bit more complicated. And she arrived on week 37 plus one day. And I don't know. I feel like when you talk to your baby, I mean, maybe this is my. I had a very strong connection somehow with her when I was going to the swimming pool or in the shower. I knew she was hearing some different noise, and I always explained to her, okay, now don't be too afraid. I'm going to a party at the start of the pregnancy.
Yeah.
A party with quite a little bit of some light music, loud music, or I'm going to the swimming pool. You'll see the. I don't know, I just was talking to her. And the fact that I was like, please, keep inside. Because I had a bit of a condition at the end of my pregnancy. I had too much bile acids in my blood, I think. It's called cholestasis something. Anyway, I was going to get...
a blood test?
No. Like when they give birth for you.
Caesarean?
No. When they actually said, okay, now your baby needs to come, so we are...
Oh, inducing.
Yeah.
We got there.
I was supposed to be induced when she was 3 weeks early, before she was supposed to arrive, and then she arrived on her own, so my water broke. And anyway, so I gave birth. It was natural birth without any drugs. Which actually, it's so funny. Yesterday I was in the train and I saw a woman with a badge baby on board, and I sat next to her. I was like, congratulations. And we talked, you know. And she said, oh, no, I can't do with pain. I'm going to have an epidural. I was like, no, you can do with pain. It's just all in the head.
Wow.
It's all in the head. And it's like exactly as if you were preparing a competition or an orchestral...
Audition,
that's the word. So everything is in the mental, and you feel so strong after. And it's a subject I never could really talk about, because I have a feeling that when people say, no, but I didn't have any epidural, I had everything natural and everything is fine. No, but it's really hurting.
Yeah.
But it's just the message that I want to deliver here is like, you can do it if you're mentally prepared. And it takes time. It takes 3-4 months to prepare mentally. Every day you need to think about how to manage the pain, etc.
But like, I think how do you prepare that kind of thing?
I prepared with hypnobirthing, positive thoughts. It's like every woman before you, some woman before you did it, and they didn't die. There is no there is no risk, I mean, much less risk than before. Yeah. But that and opening, everything is opening with with some exercises, meditation, positive affirmation. This is the one I had all the time, twice a day.
Wow, there's really quite a lot of...
And post-its everywhere in my house, like, you can do it, you're strong, you know, this
that's
kind
a lot of
thing.
Preparation.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It does. I took it, I did it for 3 months, the last 3 months.
Wow.
And you're here. You give birth, you deliver your baby without any drugs, and you feel the on the top of the world after, and you feel like, oh my God, I did it. It's like you're super proud. I mean, you're very proud, and you feel stronger after that, as a much stronger.
I'm wondering if your like background as a conductor, like it sounds very, like I imagine somebody preparing for a concert with like their post-it notes and their affirmations, and like, do you see any similarities between how you prepared?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I've always been quite determined in my in my life about what I wanted to do, etc. And preparation and for sure.
Like self-motivation. It's not it's just something you do every day.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, most days. Some days
most
off.
Days, because of course we can't always, not every day. We have to be transparent.
Yes.
But,
And then like...
And then after.
Yeah, after.
So she was born and I said to my manager, once again, I think it's
a
very
a
good... It's a relationship. It's really a relationship. I said to her, when do you think? Because I don't know, you've been there before, but I don't know. And the thing is, she's an employee. She's not a freelancer.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not a performer. So she said, well, it depends, but I think just let's cancel the first months. Just like come back to earth and just take time with family, etc. And then we'll see if you don't want to go to Sweden, if you don't want to go to Spain, you don't have to go to Sweden or Spain. It's money lost for me, money less for them as well, because of course I give a commission. But the most important thing that I had is their support, not like you have to do it. Because when I talk to colleagues who actually had a baby, the pressure from the management has been hell.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm really... lucky, but also I'm setting my boundaries with them.
Yes.
So I think it's not about, and I often say to conductors, having a management is like I hire them.
Yeah.
Actually, they don't hire me. I hire them.
Yeah.
In a way, I mean, I hire them. Yeah.
So that they can manage you.
Yeah. I mean, so my story is I give birth, and then 2 months after, so on the end of the 2 months, I was doing my first concert in Sweden. It was minus 15. It was super cold. So it was like end of March, start of April.
Wow.
And it went super well, because the first month you're totally in the stars. You can't sleep. I mean, you don't sleep much.
Yeah.
It depends if you're breastfeeding. I was trying to breastfeed, but she would not latch. So there is all this kind of like chapter that needs a proper probably podcast on it.
Yeah.
But this is maybe also another subject. And it's a roller coaster of emotions, hormones, a thing we never talk about, of course. And the management with the father, the weight loss of the kid, because at the start of the life they can lose up to 10% of their birth weight. Elsa was a bit more than 10%, and
with
the hospital,
not
exactly not, and she was always asleep, and it was very, the first week was very tricky. So I had to be readmitted at hospital, sometimes I was like thinking, I was crying for nothing, so the hormones. And sometimes I was thinking like, if she can't eat, it's catastrophic, and she's going to die, you know. So the hormones totally up and down. But when I'm also talking to other friends who either a musician or not, some of them had no hormones. So it's really depending on how we feel or how we are as a person.
So personal.
So personal. So the first month was tricky. At the start of the second month, I thought, oh, nappies, giving the milk all the time, like, I want to do something else. I want to come back to my scores.
Really?
Yeah.
You're ready?
Yeah. A month and a week or something, just at the very start of the second month. And maybe you saw on Instagram a few images where photos where I've put her on my boob, trying for her to eat, to drink my milk. And I was just like working on the score. Or she was just sleeping on me.
Yeah.
And working on my score. It was very nice, actually. And I would just put the music very, very quiet. Mm-hmm. And she would, just be on mommy and sleeping.
And then how have you balanced having, you know, fairly young baby and working again? Like, what's that been like?
So I'm super lucky to have my partner who is a civil servant, and he took 1 year off. So he's still on paternity leave.
Yeah.
And he's coming back in 2 weeks or something to his work. Mm-hmm. So, and I think the figure is something like less than 3% of dad in the UK are taking paternity. Once again, yesterday in the train next to this lady, there was her husband as well. And he said, yeah, I'm taking 2 months, which is actually a lot. In France, it's 3 days, I think, or 3 or 4 days is nothing. So, which is totally
that's like
bonkers.
A weekend.
It's crazy. It's absolutely mad.
What?
It's really small.
And that's been like instrumental in you being able to work and balance everything, like having
It's
paternity leave.
They need to do something about it.
Yes.
So he took a year out, and he came to all of my concerts with me, traveling with us. So the three of us were all the time together. Mm-hmm. So traveling, so the first thing we needed to do is to get a passport for her.
This was the
first thing. So you want to declare her, and then up to the embassy or passport. I can't remember exactly the, but it's quite simple. But and tomorrow I'm taking, I'm collecting her French passport, so she has by nationality. So we went to Sweden, minus 15 degrees, and then to Spain, something like 10 or 11 degrees. So the change of, it's an organization. It can be easy now that I reflect on it, but it's an organization with the cot, the baby cot.
Yep.
In our situation, our flat in London was so small that she didn't have a bedroom, and our bedroom was too small to have her. So she slept in her pram, which is totally fine until maybe when she was a bit too big, month 4 or something. And then we thought, but you have 4 months to kind of like
figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. And so we always traveled with our small yo-yo pram, easy to take in the plane. It was a collapsible, you know. But it can be stressful because it's like, okay, you know, if I'm engorged, which happened a lot to me, it's really painful.
Yeah.
So you want to pump your milk in between rehearsals. This was very tricky. I always had like a sign on my door backstage, like do not disturb, I'm pumping, or just do not disturb.
Yeah.
You don't have to say.
Depending on how friendly you are with your orchestra.
Yeah, exactly. So this was a little bit challenging to find the right moment to pump. In Sweden, for instance, their rehearsals are quite, they don't have the same planning as us. Like a 3 hours rehearsal is usually like, I don't know, like 50 minutes. And then a big half an hour. It's quite a light schedule in Sweden. So I had to accommodate around. And when you pump, you need to put it in a fridge. So I always, you know, things like this, and you need to think about.
Ahead, yeah.
Yeah. I was on a tour with a Scottish chamber on 3 concerts. And at some point I had to pump, but it was in a cold church without any fridge. So they had to transport my milk to a fridge somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
So it's also a lot of like things to think about.
Yeah.
It's not all about just the baby. It's also about the backstage of the baby.
Yes. And how do you, surely that's quite a lot to be thinking about and then have to prepare a score and work and be in the moment on stage. Did it feel any time like distracting or like you were kind of like not in the moment anymore?
No, on stage I was always on the moment, but there are 2 orchestras where I said to them, it's a new symphony. On both orchestras, I was like, I can't learn this symphony. Mm-hmm. Can we please go back to, it was Schumann's first symphony that I needed to learn. And I said to my manager, like, I'm on the eggs, like, I can't. I will be sight reading. This is not something I want to do. Can we ask them to do Schumann's second symphony that I know very well? So, yeah, we managed with two orchestras so they could change the schedule, the program.
Were they understanding about
that?
They were.
Yeah. That's they really were good. Understanding.
Did you feel able to be like, it's because these are the reasons why, like because of having a baby? And
yeah,
the...
I was super transparent. I mean, she was my manager. Yeah. Super transparent. Yeah, Chloe, yeah, just had a baby. I'm sure you know. And it's, yeah, she had very little time. So can we please mm-hmm. and even probably not even needing to go to the details, but like she mm-hmm. had a baby, can we please accommodate or something?
And there was no problem.
So yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, that's good. But I think nowadays people are understanding more and more, I would say, which is very encouraging and stress release in a way.
Yeah, so over it's been a year now. She's a year ish
old. And
two weeks or something like that. And have you seen a big difference in terms of balancing the workload and Elsa and everything? Like, what's been the biggest difference between a newborn and a one-year-old?
Yeah, well, when she gets to nursery, is delivering. it's a big day free for you.
Yeah.
So she started nursery when she was 10 months. She started 3 days a week. She's still actually 3 days a week. We might increase to 4. And you go back home and you're like, oh my God, I've got until 4:30. And therefore you feel you're more focused. Or even at the start on month 2, when I wanted to come back to my course, when she was actually sleeping, I was like, okay, I've got 20 minutes or whatever, maybe an hour if she's sleeping an hour. I've got an hour to be super focused on my course. And I talking to my colleagues who are also having kids as conductors, we all feel the same. It's really funny that, there is a focus there. It's like, this is precious. The minutes are precious. Mm-hmm. Even one day, I remember she would not sleep at home. So I thought, okay, I'll just bring her to the park. And then she fell asleep in the park. And I had the score underneath in the pram.
Yeah.
Schumann First Symphony that I didn't conduct because it was too stressful.
Yeah.
But it was like, okay, she's asleep. Bam. And I had to focus. You have this focus on your Instagram, Facebook or whatever is just not
away.
Even there.
Yeah.
You have not much energy, to be honest. I mean,
Do you envisage... with traveling and conducting that will change, having like when she goes to school, or how will the like traveling impact that?
At the start of December, in December I was 10 days in Manchester with Halle. I was then a week away and she started nursery, and it was quite, for me, not for her, probably not for her, but for me, it was such a big shock because we spent 7 weeks in Australia and New Zealand.
Wow.
With the three of us for work and also for holiday. And then, bam, mommy is gone for 10 days. A baby who is loved and cared and stuff doesn't, I think, and I'm reading a lot about that, doesn't feel yet the attachment. I think the feeling of attachment comes later from you 1 year plus.
Okay.
But me, I was like, really, it was so difficult. But I knew she was loved, and I knew she was, in good hands. I think that from when you put her in nursery, first, it's cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
So you can't always say, oh yeah, I'm off then, so I'm taking her. I mean, otherwise, what the point to pay for nursery? And also nursery is great to develop her skills. And there are lots of toys that we don't have, like the thing to climb. We can't have that in our house.
Yeah.
Or bubble bath or whatever.
And other children, presumably.
And other children, exactly. That's such something I really was eager when she was 4, 5 months or 6 months for her to have contact with other kids. Mm-hmm. I really was eager. And of course, when you're isolated in a way, the three of you traveling from an orchestra to an orchestra, I mean, of course, there is no possibility to have either a babysitter, but with other kids,
Yes,
So I think for the rest of my, I cannot say career, but I think I might just actually travel on my own, which is fine. But I said to my manager again, I don't want to travel more than 2 weeks. That's, 2 weeks out.
That's your boundary.
And probably that's my boundary. I think we need to set boundaries.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks in, or at least a week and a half in, and then 2 weeks out. It's more difficult when I go to the US because I don't want to go to the US for one concert. Mm-hmm. I mean, so in March, I've just looked at my schedule and it's 2 weeks in the US, mm-hmm. which is crimping my heart, yeah. you know.
Is that the longest you've been away from her so far?
The 10 days with the Halle, yes, in December. It was mm-hmm. so difficult. At the end, I was in tears to my manager. Mm-hmm. The last concert, I was like, I don't want to go on stage. I want to take the train and I want to go back to Elsa. Mm. It was awful. Awful. But then I feel like such a difficult situation. The next time I'm away, it will be fine. You just have to go through the difficulty yeah. once.
Build on it every yeah, time. Yeah,
you build on it. But I think 10 days straight away was too much. After 7 weeks,
1-on-1.
Yeah, 24-24 the time.
Yeah.
Was tricky.
That's a lot. Do you feel like a pressure to... I mean, I know that your manager and your relationship with your manager is really good, but do you feel a pressure to say yes to... Maybe I will just do like a 2.5 week thing here, or maybe, or like I could just like make my boundaries a bit more flexible.
I've been always so honest with them mm-hmm. because I've got my manager in Europe, Intermusica, and I've got a management in the US, in the North America. Okay. And he is a man, but he has 2 kids, okay. Young kids, and he understands, etc. I've never felt pressured. If there is a big orchestra debut within this period of, it's like, Chloe, can you maybe push it a bit? Or, mm-hmm. And then I said, okay, I'm going to talk with Tris, my partner.
Yeah.
So he's always in the discussion.
Yeah.
I don't want to make decisions for my family on my own. Mm-hmm. So, but he's very, very supportive.
Yeah.
So he would say, well, if you think this is going to be a big change for your career, just go for it. But then it's me. The question for me is like, do I want
yes.
to go away for that much time, you know? So at the moment, I think it's only 2 weeks. Even my last concert in the US in March, I'm going to take an overflight night.
Overnight flight. That's nice.
Overnight flight for arriving the... Yeah. Not to waste any time, you know? Yeah. This is kind of like this... this excitement
yeah.
about is nothing negative about it. It's more like when I leave the house, I'm excited to, well, first to also have time to myself mm-hmm. In between rehearsals and with the orchestra without having to think about nappies and feeding or something. But then it's also the excitement to go back home
yeah.
And to see your baby. And yeah. I'm sure that 2 weeks she changes. Like at the moment, her third tooth is piercing through. And this morning I was bringing her to nursery before rehearsal and I was like, oh my God, your third tooth is just like really going out.
Yeah.
So I'm sure in 2 weeks time she will acquire many more skills yeah. and it's going to be such a change.
Such a steep.
And the thing is, I said to Tris that I think this time when they are very young, it's so precious because we can't catch back the time is gone mm-hmm. and every day is a day that is gone. I mean, yeah. so I think I would love to, I will want to increase my concerts later. At the mm-hmm. moment, we're taking a little easy in a way mm-hmm. to feel well balanced.
Yeah.
And I'm not someone saying yes to all the invitations, because otherwise I would just be working every week. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we had to say like, oh, well, it's cramped. The Chloe's season is totally cramped because I need time to breathe and to learn my course. Mm-hmm. So it's good to say no to orchestras because they will want to reinvite you in any case.
Yeah, I guess it's like you can't get the time back with Elsa.
Yeah.
But the work... They will ask you again. So actually,
exactly,
that time has to come first with her.
Yeah.
It seems.
Yeah, when she's especially very small. Yes. I think until she's maybe 5 or something. Yeah. It doesn't mean that after it's not.
Yeah, now it doesn't matter. Agnes, move country.
But no, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been amazing talking to you. We're coming up to the end of our interview and we usually finish on a win of the week. So we think of something small or big. We've had a people you know, lots of people say, well, I wrote a book this week, and we go, oh, well, good for you. But just anything that from the past week that you've been like, yeah, that's a win. I'll go first. Because it's unfair to just spring it on you. My win is that, recently I have finally kind of told a lot of my private students that I'm leaving them. And I've been trying to kind of tell them for maybe 2 years, but I just feel too bad and I feel too attached to them. And I've been teaching them for, you know, their whole childhood and everything. But it was just getting too much with balancing everything. So I kind of finally broke the news in person. Because I have such a fear of confrontation and letting people down that I was like, no, I really need to do this just in person.
Yeah.
I will be really annoyed at myself if I do it like by text or just kind of disappear or something. So, yeah.
Well done.
I'm happy about that.
Yes, well done. Yeah. And I'm sure that you feel much more zen about.
So zen.
It feels like the shoulders can eventually sink. Yeah.
And like I can process the ending with them because I've told them in advance and I'm going to like write them a little letter and really kind of go through the ending properly.
Yeah.
Do you have a win of the week?
Wow, win of the week. I don't know. It's not related to any of this subject of...
No, that's perfect.
I just tiled my kitchen.
And oh my gosh.
And renovation work is just... joy, I want just to say, because it's something else than than doing music.
Yes,
you do something else. I've put a little story, I think, or even a reel or something on Instagram about the steps that we have been doing, cutting the ties, and there's a second kitchen I'm tiling. Actually, the first kitchen was in the London flat before we moved out, and now we are in Surrey, in Walton-on-Thames.
This is the real one.
That's not the last house.
Yeah.
Because it's just too small for another kid, and we want to, we have a bit more space. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we cannot afford at the moment. Like we need to sell one of these. You know, we can't have everything. I think it's just like detaching yourself from the music, and then when you resume on the music, I remember taking Sibelius Violin Concerto that I'm doing in March as well. That is really actually difficult to conduct and probably to play, but to get everything. And then after this styling session where you just like full of, I don't know, something else in your brain, you go back to the Sibelius and it's like, oh, wow, this is so obvious. Like, I don't know, there is this kind of zoom in and out from different activities that for me, it's kind of a win. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice. I love DIY. I'm so bad at it, but I have the same. I just feel so refreshed afterwards. Like, maybe I should just do more things that's not music all the time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing origami. Maybe you saw also on Instagram. I'm doing a lot of origami birds. And I've got a wall in the kitchen that is just plain.
Yeah.
And I've put one, two, and now it's a massive origami bird, lots of colors. And Elsa loves it. And she's like next to plants, lots of plants. Have a little look on this Instagram.
You should take bookings for tiling and origami.
Well,
maybe not yet.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I will.
I've really appreciated your transparency on social media. And I think it's really... something that the classical music world, or just the world in general, really needs. So thank you so much for your transparency and for talking with me today and making time in your busy schedule.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you so much for having me. It's been very nice.
Thank you so much.